was like,
is that a remote keyboard?
Yeah.
Podcast.
Right?
Is that a remote keyboard?
Yeah. It's wireless.
Oh. Okay.
Well, I'm glad I didn't start recording.
Hello.
No, that would have been a good start.
Good. How are you?
And, yeah.
Okay. Okay, are you trying to get him out of your house like post haste or what?
No, this little keyboard's really nice. It's got a built-in mouse ball and everything.
Well, I'm actually doing a radio show here right now, so I can't quite. I'll tell you about it. You'll probably be on it one of these days.
Jason. Hey, Jason.
That's what Liza said. Hello. we'll work it out. Maybe tomorrow night or something. You know. Sweet. If you just let people know they're sold. Anyway, yeah, I'll have one for you. Okay, sweet. I'll talk to you later. Alright. Bye-bye. Yeah, I just bought some dirt bike rims for my DRZ.
Oh,
great.
Yes. From Jason?
Yes. Jason had an extra set. And I wanted to complain.
We've got Zoe here. Say hi.
Hey.
We got John here.
Hello.
And Moti's using the bathroom. She'll say that when she gets back. Hey, we're going to start off this time with a get to know John, which we recorded earlier. So we're going to get into that right now. Take a listen. So let's do a little get to know with John, one of our favorites in the recycle shop.
The favorites.
John, where are you from?
Originally, sure. I'm from Salinas, California.
Not too far from here.
Not too far from here.
And
I've lived in various places throughout California, including Santa Cruz.
Where we are right now. How did you get into riding, and how long have you been riding?
I've always wanted to ride motorcycles. You know, I was a little kid. I'm a little older than most of the other people in the garage, except for maybe you.
Yes. As everyone knows, I already said I'm 40.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember Evel Knievel and all that other stuff.
Oh.
So that was, you know.
Yeah, for Zoe and a lot of younger people, you have no idea about the impact Evel Knievel had on our lives.
Oh, he's bigger than like Travis Pastrana. Travis Pastrana is a big deal right now, but Evel Knievel is way bigger.
He was the original. He's what started the whole stuff right now.
He was the original guy. Oh, and now you're going for the toy. We shared the same toy, Liza. We had that. That was
so when we were kids. So when I'm holding up my Evel Knievel stunt cycle, which everyone remembers, you wind up and let it go. They had the cycle
all the way down the street.
Oh my God. They had the van, they had the rocket, they had all these different accessories. And you would get this and do your stunt cycle stuff, and you could put his feet through this thing on the seat, make him stand up on the seat. I mean, yeah, we pull this out every now and then. It also, you will lose all the skin on your knuckles, because you have to wind this thing up, and it gives enough clearance for baby hands to clear without losing. Anyway, so yes, Evel Knievel was awesome. So,
he was the man. Anyway, where were we?
How you got into riding?
Well, like I said, I've always wanted to ride motorcycles. Various relatives, you know, would throw me on bikes now and then, and quads and stuff like that when I was growing up. The first bike I ever rode was a first proper shifting throttle motorcycle was a Trail 110.
Really?
Yeah, Trail 110.
How old were you?
I was 12, I think, had my dad's uncle had one, and he put me on. Of course, I went like way further than I was allowed to ride it. Right? I'm like, oh, you can ride it around on the property. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna ride all the way to the freeway. I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, and then my parents were obviously, obviously, for most people, my parents were dead set against riding motorcycles of any sort.
Yeah.
Especially after I had a really awesome crash on a quad where I lost probably about half an hour to 45 minutes of memory.
Really?
Yeah, it was a pretty good concussion.
Were you wearing a helmet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was wearing a helmet. I remember...
Wait, quad or a three-wheeler?
A quad.
Okay. I didn't realize I had quads back then.
This wasn't that long ago.
Oh, okay.
No, this was like 84, probably. Okay. Yeah, they had quads. And this particular quad had been in kind of a bad rollover accident previously. and the suspension was bent in some way. But I remember when you gave it full brake, it would want to slide to the right. Like the rear end would want to pitch out to the right when the bike was fully on the brakes. So something was bent there. And I remember I was following my buddy, and I had the throttle pinned. And then I woke up in his house.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so you know, however long it took to for him to realize that I was no longer behind him, come back, get me, pick me up, take me to his house, which was probably like 6 or 7 miles away. This was out in the farm fields of the
city. So you're just limp on his body like a deer carcass?
I have no idea. I don't remember what happened from me full throttle to me on the living room floor.
So he could have done anything to you.
He could have. I probably roofied is what happens. He roofied me. Oh, look, he finally.
You may have earned your up the butt bike and not realized it.
That's true. It was a 1983 Honda, like 125 four-stroke quad.
Okay.
Might have been a 240. I can't. It was a long time ago.
So you rode the 110.
I rode the 110, and when I turned 18, I got a scooter.
What kind?
It was a Yamaha CACY 50.
So basically, like a Riva. Was it purple?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it was red.
Okay.
No, it was red. Yeah, it was this little 52-stroke scooter, and the thing was hauled ass. It was really.
It's fast. Freedom.
Yeah, it was really fast too. I only got in one road rage accident. Some guy high on steroids or something. Guy was a little pissed off. I didn't pull over far enough for him.
All right.
In Capitola, so he could get by. So he stopped me and got out of his truck.
How far would you ride that thing?
I'd ride all over town. I was living in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Ride it all over town. Went to school. Went to work.
And what happened with that?
Slid it under a car one rainy winter morning on the way to work at like 6 o'clock.
Was it ratted out when you got it?
No, it was pristine, perfect. It was really low miles. God, maybe had 300 miles on it, 500 miles on it, maybe.
And how many miles you put on it?
Oh, I can't remember.
See, the little scooters scare the piss out of me. I feel like you could sneeze and run off the road. I don't want that.
Nah, they're a little twitchy. They handle pretty impressively if you know how to ride them.
Yeah, they freaked me out.
I know I didn't ride it too long because I picked up a 150 Elite after that.
So you went up to an Elite, and then what?
Then I got my first real motorcycle, which was a 1979 Suzuki GS425.
The GS425,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was my first real motorcycle, and I probably put... I think I put 12 to 15,000 miles on that. We got a phone call coming? This would be where we edit the podcast.
There are no edits. The shit is live.
Make it stop.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
I don't know. My phone just started randomly playing, and I don't know how. Okay.
Well, you, that is a Google phone, right? An Android?
Somehow.
It's probably the government.
Somehow, it seems... I got a text. Somehow it seems now my text alert is now the podcast.
Okay.
Oh, and I just got a text from Evelyn who says she got her new battery and she still can't get her bike to start.
Ooh. Did you cook her battery?
No. Oh, you weren't here last week.
No.
Her bike wouldn't start and I took a battery of jumpers over there and we got her bike to start. She brought it over. I said, kind of like with Zoe's bike, I think you need a new battery. Because it's just...
Probably. That was pretty kind of an old battery anyway.
Right. That's what I'm saying. If you don't know how old it is, just get a new one.
Yeah.
Start anew. Oh. All right. So after the GS425... Oh, and so people know, if you hear rattling, it's because John is rebuilding a motor right now.
Yes, I'm exactly in the middle of tearing apart an engine.
And I think our new little clutch will work.
Oh, I have the locking fire clutch basket holder thingy.
Yeah, but I think that one might work.
Might work. What else? What are the bikes after the GS425?
Oh God, I had a series of KZs and CBs. It was kind of like a war in my carport. Yeah, I had a little apartment over in Santa Cruz. I didn't have a garage; I had a carport, but it was filled with ratty old Jap bikes. You know, KZ 650s and 750s,
right.
550s. They make a 550. CB 450s and that kind of stuff. There's pretty much a war where the CBs would start to take over and there'd be like, you know, three of them and only two KZs and there'd be like, you know, four KZs and one CB and...
All right, how many KZs and how many CBs?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I can't even remember.
But I didn't own any of them for very long.
I've had four KZs, one, two, three... Four CBs.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't know very... Well, are you counting the... You're not counting the GPZ as a KZ.
No.
Right.
Of course
not. I didn't own very many of them very long. Pretty much what I was doing was trying to make enough money so that I could buy a real bike. A more modern bike, which is what I ended up doing. I ended up getting a ZX-7.
Oh.
Yeah, that's my first sport bike.
First
sport bike, first modern bike. And that was quite a harrowing leap from 80s Jap bikes to that thing. That was a gnarly beast for me at the time. You know, to be fair, they were all crazy. That CA50 was way too fast.
And
the Elite was way too fast. Every single bike I ever had scared me.
I think it's you, not the bike.
No, every single bike I ever owned scared me at first. You know, that GS425 was just like the fastest thing on the planet when I first got on it. I wheelied it. Believe it or not, I wheelied it on Market Street in Santa Cruz coming off of a stop sign. I actually wheelied that damn thing. This was like a 8,000 pound, 3-horsepower motorcycle, and I managed to wheelie it.
And
crashed it like four times.
So gosh.
I crashed the CA50 twice.
Wow.
Yeah. Once coming out of my driveway.
Did you, like, hit something, or...?
No, I was late for work, and I kind of had words with my girlfriend, like, immediately prior to getting onto the bike, and just went down my driveway full throttle, took a left out of it at full throttle, and I had this, you know, I hit the curb and kind of bounced the front end a little bit,
yeah,
and then I hit, like, a pothole in the road and just took it down.
And then, list your current bikes.
I have a DRZ Motard. Set up as a Motard. I have a CBR 954, and I have a CR250 dirt bike.
I've never seen that one.
No. Well, that's because I can't ride it over here.
And how did you get dragged
in? And you have seen it. It's been here.
It has?
Yeah.
Oh.
It has been here.
Maybe it just looks like actually, all the other dirt bikes.
I washed it in your driveway.
Oh, thank you. And usually I ask people how they came to find Recycle, but...
I knew you before
Recycle. Are one of the vampires and knew me before, way back when. And I kind of just dragged you into this.
Yeah, it used to be cool.
And then since Evelyn just texted again, if you want, we can go over there and see. She says it's turning over, but it won't catch. I said I'd be there in 5 minutes. But everyone gets asked the question that usually gets thrown around the shop. What is your up the butt bike? And I don't think I explained last time. Up the butt bike is your dream bike with a price. Well, everyone has their own valuation of what that's worth. What is your up the butt bike?
See, that's kind of a loaded question because
I know it.
And how is that? And that's a far different question for most men than it is for women.
Exactly.
I mean, you ask Megan that question, and she probably took it up the butt for the bike she has now.
She said a Riva scooter.
Sure, you know, she'd take it up the butt. I found an old Yamaha two-stroke dirt bike from the 70s on Craigslist yesterday. It's missing the seat and the handlebars and one of the wheels, and the guy doesn't know if it's started in the last 15 years. He's asking like $100 or best offer. She'd probably take it up the butt.
Right. So, but for you... It's much greater stakes.
I don't know, probably like a mid-70s Yamaha two-stroke dirt bike, maybe missing the rear.
Oh my God, you...
No, I don't...
Oh my God, really?
I don't know what I'd do. There's so many bikes out there that would be nice to have.
See, mine is like the Harley racing bike, something that's like...
Oh, that orange one, that Pascal Picotte?
Yes, I have a very high value.
Yeah, well, if you could get Pascal Picotte's V1000, that would be worth it.
Yes, that's, for me, that's like, an up-the-butt bike, it's got to be something that is really amazing, that hardly anyone's ridden.
Yeah, and Pascal Picotte took it up the butt for that. Because he had quite a an up-and-coming career happening. He was a pretty hot rider at the time he signed with Harley. He was on his way to the moon.
Well, I'm in good company then.
And that bike ruined his career. It just ruined him. He was
have a feeling if I took it up the butt for that, it might ruin me too. But, you know, we all have
Well, if we ever get a hold of one, I'll let you know.
Well, cool. Thank you, John, for getting to know you. Now let's go rescue Evelyn. And we're back. Hope you enjoy John as much as we all do.
Liars. America's most hated.
So let's move on to what we did today, what we worked on today in the garage. We are a co-op motorcycle garage where people show up and work on their bikes or help other people work on their bikes. And we had... Let's see, we had a new guy, Dan, drop by today. You'll get to know him later. On his DR650. And we had Jim come by today, who donated a bunch of stuff. And he came on his Ducati M900. Here's Moti. Say hi.
Hello.
And we had Evelyn here with her CB550. And let's see, who else besides us? I think that's it.
Yeah, it's a pretty small bit.
So, Moti, we're talking about what we worked on today, so you get to hear the stories. Let's see.
What are we doing?
Oh, you'll enjoy this. So, Evelyn called and said that her bike wouldn't start, as usual, even though she got a new battery.
And
so, last time...
Leif helped her with her carbs.
Oh, yeah. Leif came by on his Police KZ1000 that has... ape hangers now. It's crazy.
And he was going to do new pipe work.
Oh, he did the pipes. Yeah. He got those Harley pipes at the flea market, and he got those on. They point down, so it's like super bah, 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 loud.
Of course.
And he has his salad bowl headlight. It's really cool.
Yeah, they're supposed to point out like a 60s hot rod.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Like side pipes on a 67 pad or something.
So Evelyn, she texts me, bike won't start. I said, okay, be there in a little bit. So I decided to take the Trail 70 down there because it's only a couple blocks away.
Yeah.
And new battery, but she's already drained the battery. It wouldn't start. So I said, well, we really need to get the bike back to the shop.
Because like a newbie, keep hammering on the starter button until
she drained the battery. Yeah. Okay, that happens.
So I had the brilliant idea of towing her behind the Trail 70.
Did it work?
Yes!
Wow. So, kudos.
Explain the Trail 70 to people that don't know it.
1970 Trail 70 mini bike.
Yes.
And she can barely touch the ground with her little legs. So she was like, this is sketching her out at first. And we took the sidewalk the whole way. So it's the mini bike, tow rope, the CB550, both with our helmets, putting along. And I'm like, cool, just railing on the Trail 70. And we're doing like 5 miles an hour, maybe, down the sidewalk. And she's got her feet up, and I got my feet up, and we're just chugging along. And a cop came by, looked at us, shook her head, and just kept going. Yeah.
Not even worth it. Just, and then just you on the mini bike is already just like, why is it not reverse? Like,
I know, I know. Why is this not? And so we come pulling around the corner, and I see Zoe and John just like, oh my gosh.
Genius.
It was quite the sight to behold.
We got a tow bike.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what that is. It's like a tugboat seeing a big ship into harbor.
It was awesome, because first gear is geared perfectly.
Right. No, totally. It's like, that, and like, it just wants to go. And once you get that initial momentum, I mean, it's all downhill from there.
Yes.
I can't believe you made it.
I can.
I know. Fight. And so it turns out that she had... she's got too much gas flowing through her carbs. And
the time is off, something is...
We can't figure it out. So basically, her bike is very hard to start, but once it's running, it runs fine.
Does it still idle? Was that fixed? It was idling high for a while too, which seemed like it could have been jetting.
This is what she was doing. She was turning up the idle.
To
get it to start because she didn't want to sit there and crack the throttle open while it was warming up.
And she won't use the choke
sometimes
because it's
broken. She said it doesn't function as it should.
Mechanics function.
Right. That's exactly, but it doesn't, it's not making too big of a difference.
I think it's too rich.
Well, yeah, that's what we...
So her spark plugs were wet.
That's what we've been thinking all the time.
Were wet.
Yeah. She flooded it.
That makes sense.
And flooded it to the point of draining the battery. Yeah. So we pulled those apart and had her pull the carbs. And Leif was working with her, and they got all the float heights correct, supposedly. I mean, they were being technical and checking all of the float needles.
Yes.
To make sure they weren't leaking. And
I think they replaced two of
the O-rings.
Oh, okay.
I mean, just shot in the dark. Oh, and then so she put some smaller jets on.
Which she wanted to do anyway. I think there was she had like 30.
We'll put the original pilot jets that were in there when she bought it back in.
So that's, okay.
She didn't want to buy smaller pilot jets. And I had some bigger pilot jets, the next size up, and I was like, well, let's just throw them in there and we'll see if it makes the problem way worse. Which, of course, it didn't. And she decided she liked the way it ran
before
with the bigger pilots.
Really?
She liked the way it ran with the bigger pilots, and I was like, okay, well, this makes any sense.
So
it's kind of doing a few things that don't quite make sense. It must be...
So we put it back together and charged the battery up, and... it wouldn't start, and then Leif and I were playing with it, and it was as if it had no spark. Like, what the heck is going on? So then she had to run off to go get a tattoo and left us with the bike. So Leif and I...
Have you tested the coils and all that?
Well, yeah, we did find out that there was a spark, but it was almost like you couldn't even see it. We're calling it an invisible spark. It was almost like you couldn't see it, but yet when you put it all together, you could get it started.
I
tried to use my new fancy spark tool, but...
So we did end up getting it started a couple times, but John went and rode it around the block, comes back, turns it off, you try and start it, and it's just like it should start right up. So... anyone who has any opinion on what it needs can email us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com. any feedback, or if you have a problem on your bike you can't figure out, you can email
or
us.
Or like a nice body that you would like to share with us, do an email.
Oh no, we talked about, on the last podcast about
great.
The
lots
you know the joke about how great. Douglas put all the naked cowboys in my house.
Yes,
and then so.
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
But I asked him, he said he found the one in his vest before he heard the podcast.
But that's the thing. I was wondering about that. I'm like, what? I wonder if this is the moment.
Oh, that
like,
would have been so perfect.
I know.
I'm going to have to get him. But anyway, so we're still trying to figure out her bike. I don't know. That's why it's here and she's not. And then I've been putting together my engine, you know, on the XL175. Mm-hmm. Alan welded up the Kickstarter shaft.
Nice.
And I'm putting it together and I'm getting closer. Nothing going on with that, really.
This is progress.
And then Dan came by and he changed his oil and cleaned and lubed his chain. New guy, Dan. Oh. Oh, yeah, you missed the intro. Yeah, new boy, Dan showed up. Oh. Yeah, nice guy. He was on a DR650.
All right.
He met us at the bike show.
Cool.
And he has some two-stroke vintage dirt bikes.
Oh, does he?
One of which he wants to donate. And and John is into that.
John got like John
because I said a, here's
a vintage 400cc two-stroke plated enduro
dangerous
down.
So here's John's thing. I said, well, why would you want another non-running bike? And he said, it raises my odds of getting one of them running.
That's just math. That's
just, yeah, it's, you can argue with that.
Yeah. Well, he said that it's a street legal, but it owes back ridge. So,
like a ton of back ridge, but.
But we have our, you know.
Well, maybe you should just sexy yourself up when you go to the DMV and see what they can't do for you. That's always worked for other people I know in the past.
Show them a little leg, maybe pull pants down over my hips a little bit, get some low rise.
Or your best
phone.
Some Aqua Di Gio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Show a little bit of puke.
Some dab.
Okay, can we wrap that one up?
Yeah. You can't wrap this one up.
Let's wrap that up. Let's hear about Zoe's report on what she did with her bike today.
Yeah. See, today I cleaned up a lot of the. A lot of the connections to the ground.
Remind everyone what your bike is and what the problem is.
Yeah, so I have a 92 Honda Shadow.
And that's the problem.
Screw you. I love that bike. He hates that bike. I like it.
No, okay. I have zero.
You know, I defend your bike enough.
Yeah.
You really.
I have no position.
I've just been hating on Hondas
in general.
Like the last couple weeks because they just. They're kind of a pain in the ass. Honda does things. Honda is the BMW of Japanese motorcycles. They find the most complicated solution to every problem.
But sometimes.
You know? No, I think it's back
sometimes
to
it's good.
The
they,
odds.
They run great.
I think it's back to the odds, like you. The more bikes you have, the more chance you have of one running. Well, there's so many Hondas out there.
Totally.
The odds are what you're having a problem with is a Honda.
Yeah.
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is. They really have done a lot of things to make their working on their bikes a pain in the ass, you know, and they have a lot of over complex ways of doing things like actuating clutches and stuff like that, that make them prone to crazy ass problems and make them a pain in the ass. For instance, my friend Sarah's CVR F4, all of a sudden her clutch like stopped working. And what had happened
this was a mess.
Instead of having a rod going through the engine that pushes the clutch apart, you know, like every other sport bike on the planet, they have this little nub on the end of a shaft connected to the clutch plate that pulls the clutch apart, and the little actuator deal for that broke.
Right.
And of course, you can't get the clutch cover off. Because the piece is broken inside.
Against it.
You can't even take the clutch cover off to fix the damn thing. And it's a known, I don't know, it's...
Hey, can you hook up the bullshit meter to him real quick? I want to ask him a question. So, John, would you rather work on a Honda or a Ducati?
Well, look.
Just a one-word answer.
Let's not get...
Would you rather work on a Honda or a BMW?
I'm crazy. Oh, Honda.
Okay. We could keep going.
Most like a BMW of the Japanese.
Would you rather work on a Honda or a Suzuki?
Suzuki.
Oh, Suzukis are so much easier.
I gave them.
Yeah, that was a softball.
But you know what else? It depends largely on the year of the Ducati, era of the Ducati, or the era of the BMW. If 70s BMW, oh, Jesus, those are the easiest bikes to fix.
I think you just spiked the meter.
You know?
Yeah.
All right, Moti.
Ducatis.
Let's hear from Zoe.
Yes.
You are a fascinating person. We will hear more about you.
I did this, yes.
So, your bike.
Yeah, so my 92 Honda Shadow. Last weekend, I took it down and redo the clutch plates, put in new fibers, did that, thought I had done it correctly, ended up putting everything back together, put oil in it, went to start up the bike, and the starter kicked once, and the bike just shut down, like all the electrical cut out, the lighting.
Yeah, you didn't know this, did you?
It was like, all the dials went dead. Went to turn it back on, so I turned the key off, went to turn the key back on, and then everything came on after a few seconds. And then nothing, the starter would just click, click, click.
Now, if you could have seen her, like, all the blood dropped out of her face.
Yeah,
I've been working all day, breaking bolts off and dealing with that. And
wait, yeah, there was one.
Yeah, doing all that.
Zoe's internal throat wrench.
Evelyn's here. Come on in, Evelyn.
Hey.
Hi.
It's Coach Pinky.
We're doing it. Come on in, have a seat. We already talked about you and your bike.
Well, you did. What's wrong with my bike?
We're hearing about Zoe's report right now.
Yeah, I'm going to hear about Zoe.
Yeah. So, okay. Last week, got the clutch back together. Went to turn it over, everything died. Electrical seemed like something was wrong. Which seems, you know, when you're working on a bike, when you do something mechanical with the clutch and the electrical is working weird, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So at the time, we took the clutch out of the equation, and we just kind of thought something else was wrong with the electrical. So the battery was weak to begin with. Ended up following all the electrical. It was kind of acting a little weird, almost like it was grounding out or something.
Yeah, it was just like, what the heck is going on?
Or not grounding out is the case, maybe.
Yeah. So you know,
Trishan's joke.
You know it is. End of the day, when you've been working on something, now you're like, what? It's like, is it starter? Is it battery? Is it solenoid? Like, I just need. And she was getting all frazzled.
Yeah, I had a crisis point on that one.
And I think you cried a little bit.
Okay, well, I cried because it's my only mode of transportation. Okay, I don't have a car. I don't have a truck. I don't have a second motorcycle. That's
why is it
going to
pull you around? What's the problem?
We have a trail. Well, thankfully, Liza let me borrow. So I came back Tuesday to work on my bike, kept running through the electrical, checking things. Wednesday night, same thing. Thursday night, same thing. Friday, I just checked.
We rebuilt the starter.
Yeah.
We replaced the solenoid. We're replacing the battery.
At this point in time, we had gone through all the electrical in the starter circuit besides the actual switches. Friday, I was just ordered a new battery, and I figured I'm going to let set my head for a couple days and come back to it.
I have to say, though, I think what made her maybe cry is before I really thought how to narrow it down, first I was like...
You said, take it to a garage.
I said, you've got a bad wire somewhere on the bike. You're going to have to dismantle the bike and go through the entire wiring harness.
That's what made me cry.
That's what made her cry.
Oh,
she's like, your bike is fucked.
Yeah, you're fucked.
Your situation really sucks right now. She's
just like, so you just back together, you're going to have to take apart your whole bike. I cried a little bit.
It's fun.
And then afterwards, I'm like, wait a minute, we might be writing this down, but yeah, there was a day of you're fucked.
No, that was a rough day. I came back to it on Friday. So today is normal garage hours. Started and work on it. I just assumed that in the back of my head I made a checklist that I screwed up the clutch. Somewhere along the line, I fucked something up. Because that's just me.
That was the only thing worked on.
Yeah, it's the only thing I touched. So I must have screwed it up.
Yeah, must
human
be the
error. Human
yeah.
error.
User error.
Well, that's still like computer problems too.
Totally. Totally. It most often is.
So I drained the oil, took the clutch apart, And that's when I noticed that the actual basket was not engaging correctly.
Time out. No, it started with today.
Oh,
when we actually finally got the bike to turn over and it started. And the sound was.
Oh,
yeah. It sounded really bad.
It's like, oh, something's not right.
Helpful indication.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sounded like something was coming.
So then it was. Take it all apart, drain your oil, start all over. And she didn't cry.
No.
She
yeah, because she didn't have someone tell her, being like, oh, you're totally
fucked. You're totally fucked. I know you don't have money. You're going to have to take it into a shop to get it fixed. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a light at the end of the long, week-long tunnel of going through everything.
Cool. Totally, yeah. So now the bike is actually running. The problem, and it actually was in the clutch, is that
it's got a weird clutch basket assembly that none of us have seen before.
Yeah. So, like, it feels like it's in and everything kind of clicks into place.
Didn't want to be the one to say it.
Yeah, no, it does.
Check it out.
Speak up anytime, Evelyn. You're like this quiet little mouse.
I'm tired from being tattooed, so.
Oh,
I'm totally.
I'm wiped. I'm wiped and I want pizza.
So, yeah, the clutch got back together. It took a little while to figure out what was wrong, so I just started dismantling the basket, and that's when realization...
It essentially kind of sits in weird. Like, putting it back in, you kind of have to tweak a couple other little things to get it to sit all the way back in. And when you first put it in, it looks like everything's in all the way, but it's just a hair. There's a little stitch in it that you kind of got to...
And that's what all made the difference.
But you also had an electrical problem, though, right?
Yeah.
A dying battery on its last legs, and a bad ground.
But it wasn't like you messed with the electrical system for nothing. I mean, you did have a bad ground.
Yeah, so the benefit is that my starter was kind of, the leads on it were kind of weak. Like, it was kind of dirty. A lot of electrical, a lot of the wires were kind of dirty. So it did get cleaned up, and that's totally work that I think was good effort.
Yeah, it was necessary at some point.
That's what I was saying, even though it's a pain in the ass, he had to do all this stuff. The reality is she now knows intricately how the relationship between all the components in that clutch and that starter.
Everything, all the way back.
Which she can use just about anywhere, really.
Yeah.
Hey, another thing I wanted to talk about, this is something that, well, John and I, we like to, you know how we like to debate certain topics? Well, one of the things...
like to.
I think you like
it's sort of organic.
It just happens that way. One of the things we want to talk about were best bikes of the 80s.
Oh,
it's going to be 80s.
Which is kind of like our wheelhouse, right? So, I mean, y'all, welcome to... pipe in.
Welcome to China.
If you want. Can you name a bike from the 80s, Emma?
No. Honda Ascot was a great bike. Great little motorcycle. They only made it for 2 years, so it's rare. It's a gem.
It was such an amazing bike.
Yeah. Well, because you can't just make a good bike forever. No one's going to want it. You got to give people that taste of 80s perfection, where they put too many fucking things in the headlight assembly and shitty ass Magmopus tires.
Like the Honda Cup. Nobody's going to want that.
Right.
You should not.
No. Hey, it's based off a flat tracker. That's cool.
All right, John, what's one of your top bikes of the 80s?
And then
we'll go from there.
The 80s were kind of interesting for motorcycles. A lot of things happened. There.
Like 83 was golden era, I think.
Yeah, 80 to 83 was pretty hot. 85 to 87 was pretty hot.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the end of the 70s where everything was dual shock, everything was air cooled, you know. You didn't have anything that would resemble a modern sport bike. But now 1980 rolls around. And the first thing that happens is Kawasaki and Suzuki both introduce oil-cooled bikes. You know, air and oil-cooled bikes with the Katana and
the first
GPZ.
No?
The GPZ 1100. With the GPZ 1100.
Right.
Which I don't think they sold in America. I think they only sold them overseas. And in the case of the Kawi, it also had fuel injection, you know, which, of course, now...
The GPZ was still the KZ. It hadn't really...
Well, the
it was the new engine.
The first GPZ 1100, though, was
was the they called it the Z1100GP.
Right. Yeah. So for those of you who aren't as familiar with the history, because we were there and it was fascinating, the bikes that you guys, well, but you weren't biking in the biking community. And stop whispering.
Evelyn was there.
You weren't there, but you weren't in the motorcycle community being fascinated by what was happening. Basically, like your CB550, those were street bikes that then were transforming into super bikes, but they still looked like a street bike. Mm-hmm. And then the 80s became the sport bikes that we know today. Like, well, the GPZ, which became the Ninja, and the Interceptor,
right?
Which,
the VFRs.
And the VFRs.
But there's a reason why they turned into sport bikes, though. I mean, what we look of as sport bikes evolved in the 80s.
It was technology and styling.
Also with the GPZ, they had the Unitrac suspension, which is a single shock. You know, we had all these dual shock, but they had a single shock. Yamaha, I think, was the first one to put a single shock on a dirt bike in the late 70s, like 77, I think, with the YZ490. But I think Kawasaki was the first one to put it on a street bike.
It's no secret, GPZs are my favorite from the 80s. I've owned a 550, two 750s, and two 1100s.
Uh-huh. But then, in the mid-80s, we've got the RZ500, which I think
my favorite 80s,
right? Yeah, which is pretty hot, and I'm pretty sure that was the first aluminum frame street bike. So
that was fucking hot.
You know, well, we've got aluminum frames now in the mid 80s, and then of course the GSX R750,
yes,
which changes the world again.
Yes.
Well, and we have to mention the CBX.
Yeah, the CBX. So that's hot. Well, the CBX is a 70s bike, though.
Sure, but still, it was right at that crossover they wanted to bring in the six-cylinder bikes, and they thought it was the wave of the future.
Wave of the future. How about turbo bikes coming in and out of style?
Right. The FJ? Was there FJ?
FJ.
The CX650, CX500 turbos.
The X and GPC turbo.
That's one of my someday, possibly... Maybe pinky up the butt.
A CX?
CX500 turbo.
Really?
Or a CX650 turbo.
What? I thought you
pinky
like...
Pinky up really for a CX?
But you like GPZ.
Yeah, turbo.
Why don't you just go with the GPZ turbo? Which was the better turbo.
Yeah, I don't know. But also don't listen because John has like an unnatural hatred for CXs for some reason.
And yet I love to copy Moto Guzzis. How does that work?
I'm gonna freeze that.
I like Moto Guzzis.
All right, another bike I thought was significant of the 80s that's still in production today is the VMAX.
That was
most people I know have never ridden one. They've been making them for all these decades.
Muscle cruiser.
And they've been changing them. It hasn't been the same bike.
No, they redid it.
Yeah.
But the VMAX is one of the bikes that people have told me is like the bike that scared them.
That was actually up the butt bike until you were introduced to the Super Duke, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know if it's an up the butt bike. However, the VMAX was the bike that I possibly feared, and now the Super Duke is the bike I know I will die
on. Sure. Okay. If you don't fall first off, like, you know, a curve.
If you don't trip, we get it going from the sidewalk.
That is my fear, not crashing the bike, but tripping.
I think that's a very legitimate fear.
At my age, 49, that is a legitimate fear.
Whatever. It's a legitimate fear at any age.
So how do you feel about the Katana?
Ugly.
You know, as the years go by, though, the original Helmut Muth Katana kind of...
I think you're only okay with it because you like Hayabusa so much, and it has that same like rounded.
You're thinking of the second and third gen and fourth gen katanas. I mean the original 80 GSX 1100 katana.
No, I know which one you mean.
It's very
looks fuller.
It's very square.
Yeah,
it's katana. I argue that it is possibly the ugliest bike.
Yeah.
Feel free to email us at recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com.
The thing about the katana, though, is that it begat the GSXR. And that's kind of it's an important fact in the history of Suzuki.
I always give points to something that's kind of original. Probably.
Sure. Oil cooler.
And to this day, it's still weird, but I know people love it. And as John and I both said, it possibly is a great investment motorcycle.
Yeah.
Just because it is such a weird bike.
Yeah, if you can get a 1980 Katana, that's a pretty cool bike to have around.
And let's see, what else of the 80s? Oh, you know what?
Round out the 80s.
Okay. You know what I loved in the 80s? It's the one exception to the rule. The MB5.
Wow.
You're
going for plastic mopeds, huh?
The MB5 is a moped that looks like a cafe racer. Huh. All right, so you got to remember, when you're a little kid, you're like, dream about when you can get a motorcycle. And when you in California, when I was a kid, when you turned 15, you were legal to ride a moped. And then for them to come out with a moped that looked like a cafe racer, it was so awesome. But, yeah, I mean...
So what are your five bikes from the 80s?
GPZs, the VMAX... I still even go to right at that early 80s, the KZ, like 750 twin. I like that one. You know what I'm going to throw out? K bikes.
Oh, the BMW K bike. Yeah, I was going to mention those. The K1 and the yeah.
Yeah, or even the GSs whatever, back then are kind of clunky, but kind of cool. But I loved the styling of the K-bikes.
Sure. Yeah, that was one of the big innovations BMW had in the 80s. The other thing BMW did was, straight out of the gate in 1980, they came out with the R80 GS.
Right.
Which, as we all know today, is this behemoth 1200 that no one can get rid of because everybody buys them. Everybody wants a $35,000 dirt bike. So yeah, every one of those farkled up, ginormous Russia fucking frontier crossers, you can all owe that to a brilliant R80 GS. That bike is a pretty good
machine. Okay, so I'm showing Evelyn a picture of the 80s Katana. What do you think of that?
I don't mind it, honestly.
But it's weird.
It's weird. I like weird.
It's modern art, basically.
Yeah.
There's some kind of other unfortunate styles I found there. But these. I don't know. For all intents and purposes, it just looks like another sport bike to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's odd. That's all. But I guess because I think, like, if you had a GPZ, you love GPZs forever.
Sure.
I mean, we didn't even talk about the Interceptor, but, I mean, the GPZ and the Interceptor were the two bikes that were competing at the time that everybody lusted.
Well, I'll probably talk about it when I run down my favorite bikes of the 80s.
Oh.
Because that was going to be mentioned in
the 80s are when I discovered Bimota.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
That was something that's like, you will never own. Just get used to it. These are like... they were like high-end race bikes, and today still you hardly ever see one, but they do exist.
They're still in production, aren't they?
Bimota?
Yeah. No?
I'm not sure if they're making any more bikes now.
They were.
So, John, what bikes do you want to throw in that we haven't?
Well, obviously the Katana, I think, is an important bike, and the GPC was an important bike. Now we got the VFR. Gear-driven V4s. This is the first real V4 motorcycle, and Honda, you know, rode that V4 to some pretty amazing heights. You know, at the end of the 80s, they come out with the RC30, you know, which is a pretty amazing bike. Gixxer 750. You know, we got to call that. Another bike that hasn't been mentioned that is a very, very important motorcycle
is the 851
kind of sweet
Desmo Quattro.
Right.
The first four valve.
And we are leaving out, of course, all like the Italian bikes and
well,
all
well, there's
that.
Only one important Italian bike. All the other Italian bikes are kind of.
We're leaving out Triumph, all that.
Ooh. Triumph was dead. There was no Triumph in the 80s.
Right.
But that Desmo Quattro, that was an important bike for Ducati.
This is. Sorry.
Because that's the bike that begat the 916. And that's the four valve Ducati had enabled them to actually win races. And like that's what kept that company alive and kept that company in business. And probably without the A51, there'd be no Ducati at all.
Yeah. Hey, let's move on to another story I want to hear since the Dark Ride is coming up. Emily, you know the Dark Ride is coming up?
Yeah.
That's going to be a ride that's sponsored by the Vampires, and we go do a ride through the hills at night. And there was a funny story. You guys, if you whisper in the background, it sounds funny.
Okay.
We can still hear you. John, I wanted you to tell the story on the Dark Ride of when your light went out.
Oh, my light never went out on the Dark Ride.
I thought you said James. Or James.
James's light went out.
Did you? Were you? Ride. You weren't around for this, right? It was a few years ago, I think.
I think so. Yeah, I think I've only been on one.
And this is so, you know, when we're riding up through the hills, sharp turns, cliffs, you know, the whole bit. Here. And even on, like, I've done it on my CB750, and there was not enough light. It was, like, sketchy. I had to wait for somebody on a BMW or some new bike to come up behind me before I could really feel comfortable and ride at the clip we're riding on. So what happened that time?
Well, for the sake of people knowing what the hell's going on with this ride, it was kind of a hooligan ride. We were riding on pedestrian walkways and bridges and
again, we don't condone this behavior.
Levees. No, don't. I would never do anything like that. I would
never
jump a median on a motard and never go into a park and jump.
Certainly never do a burnout
I would
in front of the courthouse.
I would never jump an embankment and land in a hobo camp. Scare the hell out of them and me. I would never do that. But the fun finally went down, and we're out in the hills, you know, on these goaty, tight, lane and a half, broken pavement, gnarly roads out in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and his light keeps flickering on and off.
He was leading?
Yeah, he was leading the ride, and he can't, he's the only one that knows where we're going, and he, you know, he's got no headlight. So me and one of the other guys pull up next to him and try to use him, like, here, we're gonna give you headlights, you know, we're gonna try to sort of follow your lead, you know, so that you can see and you lead us and tell us where you want to go. He eventually, he eventually gave up after about 15 miles of trying to do this out in the hills, and I ended up leading, which was kind of a bad idea. I didn't really have a very good headlight either, and I ended up throwing the bike at full throttle, about sixth gear pinned on a motard. I threw it into a left-hander, and it turned out to be a right-hander.
Oh!
And, yeah, but I saw the mountainside, and I went, oh, shit, and threw it back over to the right as hard as I could, and I took it all the way over the white line on the left side of the road in the oncoming lane. I almost went off the road.
You're going way too fast.
I was going way too fast.
Just passing cars left and right.
Dicing it up, passing cars left and right, you know, that sort of thing. And, yeah, but I pulled it out. That was fun. That was a fun one.
That's, yeah. I'm surprised you pulled it out and didn't crash. That's.
I thought it was going to happen. I was pretty sure I was going to crash.
Who knows?
I was pretty positive I was going down.
But it's the difference between, like, being positive you're going to crash and being like, I'm still going to try and save it and see what we can do.
Oh, well, you know, the important thing you got to do is you ride that thing, you gotta ride that bike all the way into the ground.
You know what I mean?
It's your DRZ.
You keep trying to save that thing until you're separated from it. You know, if you've got a pinky on the bike, you can bring it back.
Okay. So another segment I like to do on this is to ask people to tell us their crash story. Moti, I'm looking at you. You've crashed how many times?
Just once, I think.
Well, you had one real crash.
One real crash. I mean,
tell us about it.
Okay.
Because Evelyn, you haven't crashed yet, have you?
No.
Yeah, so don't let this frighten you.
I don't know why you would let it. It was just after one of the vampires rides. After one of the vampires rides, and we had dinner at Boulder Creek, and we were all heading back, and the guys all took off, and I was like, that's cool. Going fast is cool. I'm going to do that, because I've ridden that road before. And it was really nothing remarkable. Throttle pin coming through left felt like it always did, and suddenly... Earth sky. Bike is in a like running on its side in a ditch with the headlight shining into the mountainside. And one of my friends who's in the vampires was behind me, and she was like, "Oh man, that was such a beautiful low side. It was perfect. There was just sparks, and then you were gone." And that was that. And like my bike started right up. Rode in. I was a little sore the next day, which is customary after hitting pavement. But yeah, that was it. Fairly standard low side.
And you got it over with.
Got it over with.
Statistically, you will crash in your first year of riding.
Okay.
Which is why you should wear as much gear as you can now.
It's actually first or third year, because second year you're still learning, and third year is when you're like, oh yeah, I'm comfortable, I can do overconfident, and well, you suck it up.
It's really... There are two factors that are involved in 75% of motorcycle accidents. Either that rider has been riding motorcycles for less than 3 months, or that rider has been riding that particular motorcycle for less than 3 months. So anytime you get a new bike or a new rider, that's the optimum time to crash.
Cool. Or just, you know.
Well, that brings us to our last segment that I've been looking forward to. This is a segment called What Grinds John's Gears?
I didn't realize we were doing this.
Oh, what, you don't have anything?
This is just an open rant for John.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What grinds your gears, John?
Oh, God, Hondas today. Honestly.
How about drivers that don't look for you when you're splitting traffic?
That's like whatever.
Well, you know, that's really not their fault. You know, I mean, obviously you're supposed to be paying attention and you should be looking in your mirrors, but you can't blame everything on car drivers. How about what grinds my gears is when motorcycle riders blame everything on car drivers? How about that?
Whoa.
No one ever defends the poor car driver. You know, don't get me wrong.
And it's us or them, and you just went over to them.
A lot of these things. Oh, no, I'm not going over to them.
You're going over to them. You've been driving that car.
What I'm doing is trying to help all of you.
Hold on one second. Excuse the crinkling sound. Evelyn wants a cookie.
Oh, dude, those are Chips Ahoy.
Yeah, you want another?
I'll pass them around.
Pass them around.
Yeah, here you go.
Sorry.
This podcast brought to you by Chips Ahoy. Find them in your local grocer.
See, I purposely got cookies that were soft and wouldn't hear the crunching, but it didn't think about the bag.
We should follow up with the KY Jelly app.
Just sounds.
No, I agree, and I always tell people.
An expensive motorcycle.
I always tell bikers that ultimately it's your fault.
Yeah.
For being in a position.
Sure.
Certainly true.
I mean, obviously, you know, there are certain things about cars that make it, that lead them to want to pull out in front of you and hit you. You know, A-pillars that block their view. The fact that they're kind of nice and comfortable in this heated and closed stereo environment, you know, they get complacent. And you can't really expect someone to look that hard in their side mirror when they're changing lanes.
You can when cars kill more people than guns in America. I mean, just...
Sure.
Well done, statistic. I mean, yeah. That sounded prepared.
You should, but what I mean is...
I was saying, you get licensed to do that? You went to the DMV, you went through the whole process to get your license, you should pay the fuck attention on the road.
Even if you're doing it every day, you should take it seriously.
Sure, but this is what I mean, though. It's easy. You're going to change lanes. You're in bumper-to-bumper traffic. You look in your side mirror. All you really see are the headlights of all the cars behind you. That one motorcycle headlight way back there splitting lanes is kind of hard to pick out from that field of other lights, you know, and other distractions. And, you know, it's kind of also our responsibility to be looking and paying attention to what all these
cars. That is true. Watching for that wheel to turn or the hood to dip when someone's, it's just like, it's those little things.
Sure. And they do all kinds of, they do all kinds of things to let you know that they're about to do something stupid.
That's true.
For instance, when a car driver starts considering changing lanes, they start to sort of drift over to the lane they want to change
when they're looking.
You know, well, it's not even when they're looking, it's
when they're not,
it's like subconsciously when they're thinking about it, they'll do it a 5, 6, 7 seconds before they actually go to change lanes. You know, it's the kind of stuff like that. Anyway, I don't know, you can't
so you agree then that the louder the bike,
loud pipes save lives?
Yeah.
Okay, I have experience with my shadow, very quiet. With the rat, people notice it and move out of the way. They do not notice my Honda shadow when I come up behind him. I've never had any. Okay, maybe one
when you're
person.
Changing lanes?
I have an Ugo horn.
No,
when
I'm lane splitting.
Dude, that thing.
Yeah, or I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm so disappointed. It really was.
Well, it's been my experience that it doesn't keep car drivers. Doesn't really help car drivers to know you're there, but it sure as hell lets animals know you're there. I know my DRZ, which is loud as fuck, the animals are getting out of the way a mile ahead of time. I can see them jumping off the road from half a mile away. On my sport bike and my other bikes that I've had, they don't really care. They'll just hang out in the road.
Hey, well, we got a few minutes left, and since Evelyn's been so quiet, let's do one more segment called Pick on Evelyn!
Yay!
A chance to do this, like, daily.
Speak up. So, Evelyn, you left early to get a tattoo?
Yeah.
What'd you get?
I'm still working on a thigh piece.
Is that a butterfly?
But,
tramp stamp?
But
no.
You know what,
no.
What it is. What are you getting?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's like a child skull.
A child skull?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, this is, it's kind of, yeah. I mean,
okay.
For it, so.
A child skull?
Uh-huh.
Is
like
it on a
babies.
Stake?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, is this
are there really butterflies?
Cool. There are butterflies and daisies.
Are there broken glasses and like conch?
No.
Should we ask you what the symbolism is of the child's skull?
I have suffered a couple miscarriages in the last couple years.
Oh, yeah, let's put that on.
I told you it sounded personal.
This is awesome. Yeah,
I figured it was something like
that. Yeah, so it's my memorial to those little lost souls.
It's pretty beautiful,
wow.
Actually, because it is something like, even though you know it's part of
Thank
life
you for
and
sure.
it happens.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You asked.
Great. Pick on Evelyn segment's going to turn into us picking on Evelyn and then being like,
and then we make
oh, God, we're
mean.
Why are we picking on Evelyn?
She's lost so much.
Yeah. Even if it's not true, that was just a way to shut this down, isn't it?
Huh?
Now it's just a way to shut this down.
Well, you know, to be honest, though, if those hadn't happened, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Now, are you going to get a tattoo
awesome.
Of a Trail 70 since you got to ride it?
Probably not. unless it keels over sometime soon.
Yeah. Okay.
When she had to run back to her house, I put her on it. She's like...
Yeah, that's true. Let Adrian ride it again. Shatter the whole back end of it.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like four wheels
fun,
in the span of 3 feet.
So how many hours have you sat for the tattoo?
For
so
this
far?
One, I think we are about 3, 4. We're probably about 15 hours in right now.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a pretty big piece.
A lot of sitting. Cool.
Wow. Well, on that note, I think next time maybe we'll get a chance to get to know Evelyn. But for now we're gonna wrap it up. Thanks for listening to us again. recyclemotorcyclegarage@gmail.com if you'd like to write in with us. Thanks for listening. Keep checking back and good night. Have a good one.
Cool.